Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Is there an animal you're afraid of? Is there one that ever tried to get you when you were a kid? There's one who tried to get me, I still remember, which we're going to talk about today on Deadliest Animal Attacks here on the Council of Trent podcast. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk theology, apologetics, how to explain and defend our Catholic faith. But Fridays on the Council of Trent podcast are Free for All Friday, where we talk about whatever I think is interesting and fun. And today, I am interested in animal attacks. I remember on Fox, of course it's going to be on the Fox network, right? They used to have that old series on Fox, When Animals Attack. Did you ever remember watching that? So I remember watching that back in the day. I don't think they have it up anymore. But I want to talk today about deadliest animal attacks, animals to be concerned about. I remember once I was not injured, but it scared the daylights out of me when this dog attacked me as a kid. I remember I was 7 years old and I was at the playground near our house. It was in Encinitas, California. We were at this playground. I believe it was near Swami's Renewal Center. It's kind of the new agey thing in San Diego that people will go to. It's right over the bluffs where a lot of people go surfing. So my parents took me to the playground and I was playing. I was out on the grass and this big dog. I mean, I was seven, so maybe the dog's not as big as I remember, but he seemed pretty big to me. It was always funny. I feel bad, like when I take my kids, especially when they're little, when they're only like 18 months old, and you go out and meet friends, and like the dog comes up to say hi to them, and they freak out, and people are like, it's okay, it's okay. But like, from a toddler's perspective, many dogs, that would be like if you went and visited a friend, and their bear came out to say hi to you. And it's like, it's okay, he's a friendly bear, he's a nice bear. For a toddler, I understand why they would freak out over these things. So I was 7 years old, I was in the playground, minding my own business, and I see this dog, and he seems huge to me, and he just looks at me. And then he starts growling. Now, he's tied to a lawn chair that his owner was sitting in, but the owner was standing up talking to somebody. He was tied to the lawn chair, and he bolts after me. And he is just barking and baring his teeth. He's running straight at me, and he's dragging the lawn chair behind him. And the owner is running after him, and I'm just like screaming, and I'm backed up against a fence, and I can't go anywhere. I don't remember what happened next, actually. I was not injured. So either the owner got hold of the dog didn't get a hold of me. I think someone might have pulled me up because the fence was not very high. The fence was only like, you know, 3 or 4 feet high, but I was seven. I was littler. I wasn't able to get over it. I think somebody might have pulled me up over the fence before the dog got me. So that is my memorable animal attack, but thankfully nothing bad happened to me. Several years later, actually, I remember when I was in junior high, we had our dog, he was tied up outside, and a neighbor, their dog, got loose, went over the wall, and started biting our dog, and our dog was like hiding and cowering under the car. And the neighbor actually had a pit bull. So like when pit bulls attack, like you cannot stop them. They are attacking machines. And so they stabbed that pit bull. They stabbed it repeatedly with a butcher's knife and it would not let our dog go. And so I ran inside and got a piece of rope. They were able to run under its mouth to get inside of its mouth to pull it back. And our dog, we took him to the vet. He was like kind of shaken up. He was shaking. But he actually turned out all right. So with that preface, today I want to talk about animal attacks on human beings. What are the deadliest animals? What are the most memorable animal attacks throughout history? Let's start more of a broad question. What animal or creature would be a better term? What creature is the deadliest for human beings? The answer, the deadliest creature? Man. 500,000 human beings are killed by other human beings every year. But actually, that's number two. I mean, I thought that was dramatic. The deadliest game, the deadliest creature, man. And humans do kill. You're more likely to be killed by another human than by a non-human animal, except for one non-human creature, I should say. What creature kills the most human beings? Mosquitoes, actually. Mosquitoes are credited with killing somewhere between 750,000 and 1 million people every year. And they do that by transmitting diseases, especially malaria. That's why there's actually a charity that I support, and I would highly recommend you support as well. It's incredibly cost efficient. It's called Against Malaria, or the Against Malaria Foundation. And what they do is you donate to them, and it only costs like $3 to $5. You can send a malaria net to someone in the world that suffers from mosquitoes that carry the malaria virus. And it's debilitating. It can make you either really sick or in some cases it can kill you. But all the best thing that can protect people at night when they go to sleep is to just have a malaria net. I remember actually when I was visiting a friend, she was a missionary in Argentina. So I went to visit her and I was staying in the Villa. Now in Argentinian Spanish, by the way, it's like Castilian in Spain. So it's not a pollo, chicken. The double L's are not a Y sound. It is an SH sound. So not pollo, pollo. So we were not in the Villa Jardín, we were in the Villa Jardín, the garden village. But it was the poor part of town, and I will tell you, it did not smell like a garden, that's for sure. It was not the most pleasant place to be. Very pleasant people, but not the most pleasant place to be. And at night, I tried to sleep, and those mosquitoes ate me alive. I was trying to fall asleep, and you keep hearing them, zit, zit. And I tried even wrapping myself up in the blanket, and they still were able to stab me through the blanket. You need a really fine net to keep the mosquitoes out. Fortunately, one of the other missionaries gave me some of his anti-mosquito repellent cream. Like, that was the only thing that kept them at bay, was putting on that thick cream to keep the mosquitoes away. So mosquitoes, they do kill 750,000 to a million people every year by transmitting malaria. If you want to help to combat that, you just give a few bucks. I mean, if you spend $100, I think you could buy probably about 30 malaria nets, mosquito nets for people. It's a donation that's well worth it. Check out the Against Malaria Foundation. So it's mosquitoes, humans. Then as the list goes down of creatures deadly for human beings would be snakes, or as Indiana Jones would say, snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? Dogs or canines. I think that might include wolves as well. And then freshwater snails, actually. Freshwater snails, they probably eat a few dozen people every year. I'm just kidding. Snails don't eat anybody. It's when we eat the snails and they got bacteria that is deadly for human beings. You don't want to mess around with that. But let's go to the more traditional kind of animal attacks. When I say animal attack, you think of shark attack, right? You think of Jaws. Dun-na, dun-na-na-na. Dun, 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 dun. So, you know, and you go in the water. And actually, we were at the beach here in San Diego a few months ago when the COVID lockdown hit. So when they locked down California, they closed the beaches. Then everyone raised a ruckus. Because if you take away the beaches from people in California, they have no reason to live. Or at the very least, they have no reason to stay here in California and pay the high prices if you can't go to the beach. So people protested, and they finally reopened the beaches. But they had this rule where you had to keep walking along the sand. You couldn't get in the water. You had to just be on the sand. You had to just keep walking. You couldn't stay in one spot. So it's like, oh, my goodness. And then finally, they reopened the beaches and let them be a sense of normalcy. And so we went there, actually, when they finally got the beach reopened, and you could go in the water and sit on the sand. And then what happens? Somebody got bitten by a shark. It was a smaller shark that bit the guy on the leg. But they had a protocol at the beach where if somebody gets bitten by a shark, they close the beach 1 mile in every direction from the site of the shark attack. So we were almost got our beach back. I was like, oh, good, they finally reopened. Then someone was bitten by a shark. But the odds of actually being attacked and killed by a shark are really low. The odds are about 1 in 4 million. I think 1 in like 3.75 million. It's millions to 1 that you'll die from a shark. You're way more likely to be killed by a lightning strike or die of hypothermia. Shark attack should be the least of your concern. Though they have entered into popular lore with movies like Jaws, for example. There's that famous scene in Jaws where they talk about the USS Indianapolis shark attack. So here's what it says in this article about that. The USS Indianapolis was a heavy cruiser of the U.S. During World War II, and in July 1945, the Indianapolis completed a top-secret high-speed trip to deliver parts of the first nuclear weapon used in combat, Little Boy. So it was part of this secret mission to deliver parts of the atomic bomb. But then on July 30th, a little after midnight, the Indianapolis was sunk by a Japanese Navy submarine. It was hit by torpedoes, and it sank in 12 minutes. Of the nearly 1,200 crewmen on the Indianapolis, about 300 went down with the ship. 890 ended up in the water. But there was a miscommunication in the movement reporting system, so nobody noticed that the ship was overdue, so the men ended up being in the water for several days. And of the 890 that ended up in the water, only 316 survived. A lot of them died from dehydration, from saltwater poisoning, from exposure. but several of them were actually killed by sharks. And so you have that memorable scene in Jaws where you've got Quint, Brody, and Hooper on the boat, right? So Hooper is played by Richard Dreyfuss. Roy Scheider plays Brody. So Brody and Hooper are out there trying to capture the shark. And remember, they're at that big meeting, you know, at the town meeting. We got to do something about the shark. And then Robert Shaw plays Quint, the old fisherman guy. He's like, I'll get you that shark. And, you know, there was the monologue there. And so they go out and it's one night they're below the hull of the ship, the boat, I should say, because when they finally see the shark, what do they say? We're going to need a bigger boat. And so they're talking, they're comparing their scars. And then Quint, played by Robert Shaw, masterfully by Robert Shaw, starts telling them about the USS Indianapolis. It's a great scene. I gave you the overview of what happened at the Indianapolis, but it's a great description of it in this scene of Jaws.
Very first light, Chief.
Oh, I should say that in the film, Quint plays a Navy veteran and says that he was on the Indianapolis and he survived being in the water for nearly a week with the sharks. Also point out that in the film, Quint plays a veteran. So he said that he went down with the Indianapolis when he was a sailor in World War II and survived being in the ocean for nearly a week with all the sharks trying to attack them. And interesting, I went to check up on this. His age matches it in the film because Jaws came out in 1975 and Robert Shaw was born in 1927. Since he was born in 1927, he would have been 18 in 1945. So he was around the same age bracket when Jaws was released to a Ben, a World War II vet who could tell a story like this.
Sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. You know, it's kind of like old squares in a battle, like you see in a calendar, like the Battle of Waterloo. And the idea was, shark comes to the nearest man, that man, he start pounding and hollering and screaming. Sometimes the shark go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes that shark, he looks right into you, right into your eyes. You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. When he comes at you, he doesn't seem to be living until he bites you, and those black eyes roll over white, and then, then you hear that terrible high-pitched screaming. The ocean turns red, and in spite of all the pounding and the hollering, they all come in and they rip you to pieces.
Well, I'm going to be canceling my trip to Amity, which is the town in Jaws, or really any other town along the Atlantic Ocean where a great white shark might come after me. Interesting, here's another story, actually, of another famous alleged animal attack from World War II. This would be the Battle of Ramrey Island, which is a part of Operation Matador in January and February of 1945. So in 1942, the Japanese army took over Ramrey, which is an island off the coast of Burma. And so the Allies made an attack on Ramrey as part of their island hopping strategy in 1945 to get to the Japanese mainland. And they attacked the island and were able to cut off the Japanese that were on the island. And so the Japanese were marooned and stuck on this island. It says here that there have been reports of Japanese soldiers being eaten by saltwater crocodiles living in the inland mangrove swamps. The Guinness Book of World Records has listed it as the worst crocodile disaster in the world and the most number of fatalities in a crocodile attack. But scientists and historians have dismissed it as implausible. Well, if the Guinness Book of Records says that that's what happened, that's good enough for me. At the very least, it makes for a fascinating story and a horrifying account that you have these soldiers. You know, where would you rather be? Would you rather be the soldiers that are floating in the ocean with the sharks coming at you at the USS Indianapolis? Or would you rather be the Japanese soldiers on this mangrove swamp huddled there waiting for the saltwater crocodiles to come at you? Me, I would rather be here recording the Council of Trent podcast. But while the Battle of Ramrey Island and the number of crocodile deaths there is somewhat the subject of legend and speculation, there is evidence that one of the most dangerous single creatures on Earth has killed hundreds of human beings, and that would be a large male Nile crocodile from Burundi named Gustav. There's actually a whole movie about him. So here's the trailer for Gustav. It was originally called Gustav. The title was changed to Primeval. It was released in 2007. Take a listen.
In one of the most remote locations on Earth lives the world's most prolific serial killer. He has claimed over 300 victims. He is elusive, intelligent, cunning. And to this day, he remains at large.
So the movie Primeval is about this crocodile named Gustav, which has been photographed, which people have observed. It's been photographed. He's an abnormally large crocodile. People have tried to capture Gustav, but it didn't really go as well as people planned. So according to this article, Gustav is notorious for being a man-eating crocodile, rumored to have killed as many as 300 people on the banks of the Ruzizi River on the northern shores of Lake Tanganyika. Though the actual number is difficult to verify, he has obtained near mythical status and is greatly feared by the people of the region. Since Gustav has not been captured, his exact length and weight is unknown, but in 2002, it was said he could easily be more than 18 feet long and weigh more than 2,000 pounds. So just imagine, that's a car. That's a car basically coming at you with its jaws ready to snap and to get you. So they're not sure about the age. Some people said that he might be 100 years old, but other scientists believe that a 100-year-old crocodile would be nearly toothless. It wouldn't be much of a killing machine. So it's believed he's likely no older than 60 years old and is likely still growing. Gustav is also known for the 3 bullet scars on his body. His right shoulder blade was also found to be deeply wounded. They tried to capture him. They set up these cameras and I think a goat in a cage, you know, kind of like the T-Rex scene in Jurassic Park. But then there was a storm. They came back. Everything was a wreck and Gustav was nowhere to be found. So you see why Gustav was turned into a film. He's a great character for that. Another great animal character for a film like this would be the Wolves of Paris. It would be a great redemption, by the way, to that movie The Grey starring Liam Neeson. I saw that a while ago. I saw it in theaters, and the trailer's really hyped up. This is the movie where Liam Neeson was going to fight a pack of wolves. I'm so excited to see this. I don't have money, but what I do have are a particular set of skills. Good luck. You know, imagine like, you know, Liam Neeson fighting these wolves. And in the trailer, he's running at the wolves. He puts on these glass bottle shards in his hands like claws. And spoiler alert, if you don't want the spoiler, skip ahead about 15 seconds. But I was so mad because that trailer shot of him rushing the wolves to attack them is the last shot of the movie. You never actually get to see him fight the wolves. Ugh. What a disappointment. But I would see they should make a movie about the Wolves of Paris with Liam Neeson starring in this as the guy who ends up killing the wolves. So the Wolf of Paris, was a single man-eating wolf which terrorized the commune of Soissons, northeast of Paris, over a period of 2 days in 1765, attacking 18 people, 4 of whom died from their wounds. So this is in 1765. The first victim of the wolf was a pregnant woman who was attacked on the last day of February. Diligent locals took the second trimester fetus from the womb of this pregnant woman who was killed to be baptized before it died when the wolf struck again not less than 300 yards from the scene of the first attack. So they tried to fight the wolf off to no avail. The episode eventually ended when Antoine Savarel, a.k.a. Liam Neeson for our movie, a former member of the local militia, tracked the wolf to a small lane armed with a pitchfork. The wolf sprang at him, but he managed to pin its head to the ground with the instrument, holding it down for roughly 15 minutes before an armed peasant came to his aid and killed the animal. So when you go and look at single animals that have killed many people, the wolf of Paris in 1765 only killed 4 people, but it still terrorized them over the course of several days. So actually, when you look at the list of animals that are responsible for the most deaths, there are even ones that go beyond Gustav, and those would be very famous tigers and leopards that were also eventually hunted and killed by the same guy who needs to be portrayed by Liam Neeson in a movie. I want to get Liam Neeson back out there. What has he been doing recently? He did a documentary trying to save the Central Park, like, stagecoaches, like the people who drive the horses around from animal rights activists. I was like, good for you, Liam Neeson. You stand up to those animal rights activists. It's something you don't expect from Hollywood types that much. But even beyond Gustav, here are some big cats that actually had some big counts when it came to targeting human beings. So the first would be the Champawat tiger. This was a Bengal tigress responsible for an estimated 436 deaths in Nepal and the Kumaon area of India. So Nepal and India border each other. So this is right on the border of Nepal and India. During the last years of the 19th century and the first years of the 20th century, her attacks have been listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as the highest number of fatalities from a tiger. Eventually, the Nepalese army was called in. Despite failing to capture or kill the tiger, they organized a massive effort to force the tiger to abandon her territory and drove her across the border into India. So when they got him out of Nepal into India, it's like, not my problem anymore. Where she continued her killing in the Kumaon district. The tiger would adjust her hunting strategy so as to best hunt and evade humans traveling great distances between villages. I think something like 20 miles a day in her new territory to claim victims. As she would hunt, most of her victims consisted of young women and children, as they were the ones most at risk thanks to their habit of going into the forest to collect resources for livestock, firewood. So you have women getting water, children going to get firewood, become easy prey. In 1907, the tiger was killed by the British hunter Jim Corbett. So Corbett actually was born in 1875. He lived till 1955. He was a British hunter, tracker, and naturalist, and he authored a number of books about man-eating tigers and leopards of India. So he was a colonel in the British Indian Army, and he was hired multiple times. And they're like, we got a man-eating tiger, a man-eating leopard. They're like, get Corbett. So Jim Corbett became famous as the guy who was able to bring down these tigers and leopards that were killing hundreds of people when no one else was able to do that. Though most of his kills were tigers, Corbett successfully killed at least two man-eating leopards. The first was the Panhar leopard in 1910, which allegedly killed 400 people. The second was the man-eating leopard of Rudraprayag in 1926, which terrorized the pilgrims at the Hindu shrines of Kednareth and Badrinath for more than 8 years and was said to be responsible for 126 deaths. He was also responsible for bringing down the Taladez man-eater, Mohan man-eater, Thak man-eater. So he ended up writing all of this down in a book called The Man-Eaters of Kumaon. And what's interesting about Corbett is that he wasn't like some bloodthirsty, like, I've got to bag him. You know, remember the bad guy in Jumanji? Jumanji! I'm talking not the new one with The Rock, the old one with Robin Williams. It was actually kind of scary. And, you know, the boy, you know, he ends up lost in the jungle of Jumanji, comes out. And one of the things from the game is, Jumanji, is that this hunter is after him. And the hunter is actually his dad dressed up as the hunter. It's a projection of his inner psyche. You saw Jumanji with Robin Williams. I'm sure you did. So Corbett was not like that hunter, like, I've got to hunt and get that game. He was a naturalist. He loved the environment. He loved animals. And he was brought in. He still loved human. So he loved human beings as well. He didn't want these tigers just killing people. And he looked at these man-eating animals, these tigers or leopards, with a kind of sadness. He was empathetic towards them because normally tigers and leopards don't consistently hunt human beings. They have their own game. And they're usually afraid of human beings. They want to stay away from people. So he was sympathetic towards these animals. So he wrote in his book, The Man-Eaters of Kumaon, the wound that has caused a particular tiger to take to man-eating might be the result of a carelessly fired shot and failure to follow up and recover the wounded animal, or be the result of the tiger having lost his temper while killing a porcupine. So the idea here is that Corbett's saying these tigers must have been debilitated or injured by a porcupine or by a hunter that grazed them or shot them and injured them. So they're not able to hunt other animals out in the jungle. The other animals in the jungle kind of get away from them easier. So they prefer to then go after their last resort, humans that they're normally scared of, but they don't want to starve. So they go after children and women going out to collect firewood. It says that Corbett preferred to hunt alone and on foot when pursuing dangerous game, but he often hunted with Robin, a small dog he wrote about in Man-Eaters of Kumaon. So they really need to redo Man-Eaters of Kumaon with Liam Neeson and maybe take a little bit of artistic license there as they do. So, hey, I thought this was a fun episode of Free For All Friday to talk about those deadly animals out there out to get you. But you don't have to worry. Don't let these stories scare you. Remember, when it comes to statistics, you're more likely to slip in your bathtub than get eaten by a tiger. Now you're going to be scared of going in their bathtub, which of course I don't mean to do. But hey, it was really fun sharing all of this with you. Thank you guys so much, and I hope that you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.